I'm Elizabeth. I work at CNBC covering technology, and we're going to have a great discussion today about women in blockchain. Very relevant topic with the two of you. We have Sally Eves, who is CEO of Sustainable Asset Exchange, a thought leader in a lot of emerging technologies in blockchain, really a lot of expertise and in this field. And then we have Kavita Gupta, who is the recipient of the UN Social Finance Innovator Award. You also, of course, work at Consensus VC with a focus on blockchain. So I think the two of you combined can bring a good amount of expertise to this discussion. I think when we're talking about women in this field, the place you have to start is with the problem, unfortunately. So I was looking up some data, and research showing 9% of women in founding teams of blockchain startups, 9% of founders are women. So that's not a very high number we've got there. Kavita, I'll start with you. What are some of the reasons for this as someone who sees a lot of these early stage companies? Why is this number so low?
I think it's a combination of things. First of all, we as a women, when we start going into great schools, great colleges, having those degrees, we feel this sort of like, oh, we are already like very thankful for being where we are. So a lot of it is not about what's next. It's about from that generation to this generation, we are very thankful to be here. It's just like a social part of our upbringing and the social part of people telling us, oh, you got into masters, that's great. Like, it's never a conversation about what's next. And combined with that, the riskiness of being an entrepreneur, where having your MBAs degrees, engineering degrees, or whatever you have, and then not going with a cushion job where you can show to your parents or your family, hey, you helped me to get this degree and here's my paycheck, you're actually taking that risk, is even more daunting. So I think, and people usually don't connect with it. So most of the time I feel like that sense of lack of security and where is it gonna be is not normal. And also they don't see a lot of women doing it. And if they do that, if it's like a norm, like even from Stanford MBAs or Harvard MBAs, when you'll see a lot of guys within the college start making startups and say, okay, let's try to hedge it. If I raise this much, I will be able to go and then just start working on it. You don't see a lot of women doing it. That's my experience.
Sally, what have you witnessed here?
Yeah, I think one of the things I'd like to bring to bear is actually starting much younger in this conversation. So I run a foundation called Aspirational Futures, and like yourself, I do an awful lot of work with the UN, particularly around SDG 4 for quality education. And I think we need to be looking at things like STEAM above STEM. So bringing arts as equal stage alongside technology, because we need creative confidence, you know, to get people involved, going beyond gender, to get everybody involved in these things. We need to look at that aspect too. And that starts right from primary school. I mean, even here in the UK, if you can't afford to, music lessons, arts, etc., you can't get that on the curriculum. So that's what this foundation is all about, is opening up access to opportunity, looking at arts and technology together, and kind of visibility of role models, which you touched on there as well, massively important. If you can see it, if you can feel it, it encourages others to do the same. So beyond where we are now, let's look at how we can make a difference and be sustainable for the future about this. So that's something I really wanted to focus on in the conversation today.
Talk a little bit more about that idea of art, because I think that might be confusing to so many of the sort of industry experts here. How does that possibly tie in? We're talking about these scientific concepts just from that big picture view.
Yeah, I mean, I very much believe in the holistic perspective, you know. We've got some amazing opportunities here. I mean, I'm a professor of advanced tech, so blockchain and AI are my specialisms from that point of view. But if we haven't got creative confidence, how are we going to, you know, we've got all these things we can build with, but you need to have that inspiration, that creative confidence to build that future. Otherwise, we're missing out so many different perspectives, you know, and particularly with AI, there's a lot in the news about lack of ethics, you know, the ethical issues, potential for bias, and quite unintended at many times. So we need inclusive, diverse teams to be able to do that. And we can't just look at where we are now, we need to be building for the future as well. And the gaps we're seeing in blockchain, but also in AI development, also in cybersecurity as well, we need to look at making steps here. These gaps are only going to get bigger if we don't do that. And I think arts has got a big part to play in that too.
Kavita, how does that creativity play into some of the, you know, companies that you see? And is there a women, do you ever notice that particularly with maybe some of the women founders who you've met in your time all over the place?
With respect to the creativity?
Yeah.
I think women bring two very different things. First, multitasking. Like, we just have to accept men cannot multitask. I mean, we can have debates about it, but we all know who's going to win. Like, they just can't. I have seen a lot of male founders saying, we have to do this, 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 and they will always think about it sequentially. Always. And then you have women, like, from one board meeting to another board meeting. It actually happened very recently, and that's why I picked this thing first. And she's like, she had a list of very similar items, but the way she has drawn it on is on the whiteboard is like not sequentially, but some things in the middle of, some things like designating it to other people, and like the delegation part and making it work, sometimes maybe micromanaging, but still making it happen. It's very interesting. And I think the creativity is, there is always, this is another, I think, an upbringing thing. Like, if you have to read somewhere, there is one path, but there could also be five other paths. So they think of the straight path, and then they say, okay, if this is not going to work, maybe this, maybe this, maybe this. And you have options right flying out there, which you don't get that quickly with a lot of male founders. And I don't want to bash them, but it's just like, I'm just talking about the brain system or how society actually schools you to be there.
How did both of you end up in these sort of leading roles in blockchain? And quite early on, too, neither of you started doing this, you know, a year ago when kind of became so mainstream. So I'd like to hear your kind of personal stories first.
For me, it was kind of bringing together really my research work and my practice work. So my background is very much as a CTO, always been very, very hands-on in tech, always very curious, like to take things apart and put them back together again. So really from a young age, that was very much, it all stemmed from curiosity. And then building up towards my PhD, it was all about looking ahead at the future of technology and how we can apply it. And for me, the potential of blockchain was going beyond business. Yes, doing great business, but more what we can do beyond that. So I'm really passionate about social impact. And for me, harnessing the power of technology, so blockchain, but also emergent technology more generally, for me was a major attraction. And I saw that quite earlier on. And, you know, the projects I'm doing now, Saks being a big part of that, is looking at how, for example, you can bring blockchain to supply chain, using it for proof of provenance and looking at sustainable, fair, ethical trade. You know, it's again, this whole theme of opening up opportunity is massively important to me. And I really saw this technology as a way of propelling that forward.
I think very similar. I come from a technology background. I have an engineering degree. And I just started realizing I can go and code. Or I can use this for something more. And specifically for blockchain, I've been following it since there was a very interesting solution out of MIT Sol for identity solution for refugees like 2 years back. And I started observing the space and I got into it almost like 1.5, 2 years back as Consensus Ventures. But there's also interesting actually connecting it back to women and STEM. I remember all the way back in 98, 99, when I was getting into the technology space, one of the reasons my grandmother gave for not to go into the technology space, saying there's only two women in the whole class, so we are not comfortable with this. And I'm like, that's cool, I'm different. So I think it's a very interesting perspective, and I always tell people, women or diversity or anything, I'm like, if you are different, that doesn't mean wrong or bad. I mean, it's just your individual perspective. I saw that being different or the only one in, like, whether it was on the trading floor at IFC or whether it was like investing in Africa and Kenya office or then coming back in blockchain, even in today in a lot of board meetings and big funders room, as like being an only one or being one of the few ones, being different means special in a good way.
How do you get that confidence, and what are some of the challenges that you face maybe day to day? I know when we talked ahead of this, there were certain examples that sort of stuck with you, and perhaps you could share a few of those, both of you.
I would just continue on this. I think, what is the other option? Like, I could feel bad, and then if I feel bad, I'm going to mess it up, and I'm not going to be part of this. Mm-hmm. If I want to be here, then I deserve to be there. I didn't go there because I knew somebody or something. It's there because of my work. And if I look different, but my work is same, I'm just special. So, I mean, you just have to have that confidence, and what's wrong in having that confidence? And if somebody makes me feel different, then it's his problem, not mine. Mm. So that person has to deal with it. I'm going to continue to do my thing. Mm.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with that more. And it's all about being authentic at the end of the day. And if you've got purpose in what you're doing, that really drives you. I mean, it's driven everything that I've ever done. And there are circumstances. I mean, there's been a few events that we talked about this on the phone a little bit that have been in quite interesting context, let's just say. And I was asked to do a diversity event in a strip club, as an example, which was an interesting one. So there are things that you come across that are... How would that... Where
does
that
work.
Idea even come from? It just doesn't make sense. So there are occasions like that. But at the end of the day, if you believe in what you're doing, you go out there, you channel... all your positive energy, and I'm very much on the positive side of things, you know, rather than dwell on what's wrong at the moment, let's look at pragmatic ways to make things better. Let's go out there, be purposeful, drive forward what we're doing, and I think then you can build a real contagion effect and get other people passionate and involved and kind of join on that journey. So I totally agree with you. It's all about going out there, doing it, and if something's not quite right, there's ways to get around that, and you have to do it by example, I think.
But sometimes you have to find the balance. I think we talked about this. Sometimes you call it out, and sometimes you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So you just brush it off, right? I remember there was a time which I shared with you earlier on the call. I was in Africa, and I was in this really high-profile, some minister meeting. I can't call it out. And I was very young, and I was, I think, 22 and a half, 23. I was on behalf of World Bank. I was like closing a very big investment deal, and my senior manager couldn't come, but he gave me like all the power to write a $100 million check if everything checks in on the diligence. And I kept on sitting on that meeting after meeting 2-3 times, and the minister won't look at me. He just would not look at me. He would not answer, and he would look at my assistant. White young guy, and he would answer him. Every question I'll ask him, he'll look at him and answer. So the first meeting, I thought maybe he has some eye issue or something and I shouldn't call it out. And then the second meeting, I felt like, no, he's looking in everyone's eye but me. And then I started asking, is it a cultural thing? He's not supposed to look at women or something, because I'm the only woman in the room, so I also have to respect it. And I realized, no, it's just crap. So in the third meeting, I just call him out, and I'm like, with a very nice smile, I said, "On Mr. Minister, like, you can continue to look at him. I know he's very cute, but at the end of the day, I'm going to write the check. So I'll really appreciate if you look at me, and I hope there is nothing which is really bothering you." And he got so, like, I think he wasn't doing it purposefully. It was just something at the back of his mind, and he got so conscious after that. I don't think he looked at anything else than me for the rest of the meeting. So sometimes you just have to call it out very nicely. I mean, if it's not, which is invading your space, or like, or sometimes there are just people whom you don't want to waste your energy to even change. You're like, whatever, just brush it.
Have either of you seen improvements since you've been in your professional careers in the tech world, broader? You know, we've talked about this a lot, certainly over the past year, just a lot of movement happening. But have you seen it kind of on the ground yet?
One thing, taking it more personally in terms of approach, there's a big event that I've set up next year, which is very much about tech for good. And as an example, as part of that, I've been trying to look at things that where maybe things have been going wrong, and how can we, again, lead by example and do things differently. So, for example, as that, it's all about people in tech, showcasing great women that are doing great things, but also great guys as well. It's very inclusive, a lot of underrepresented groups, mixed panels, things like that. So it's very much showcasing talent from different experiences, different sectors, and bringing them together under one roof. So I think there's a lot that can be done, looking at how events are run, looking at what's going really well and what maybe could be improved upon. And let's be pragmatic about that and go even beyond that. And let's actually do it ourselves and create brand new things and put all these things into action. And certainly, as I alluded to earlier with the foundation, that's all about building up skills. Also, I've developed some open to access courses around blockchain and AI, nothing that's a charge. You know, anybody can go out and get that. So it's taking away some of these barriers to getting involved. And so for me, things that are doing that and leading by example that way are a good sign of moving forward. And, you know, taking ownership collectively of these things is a massive part of all of that.
I have noticed personally a lot of changes, at least in the Silicon Valley. Actually, I've noticed more changes there, and I'm very surprised that UK is a little behind in a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like in US, I could see, like, if a female founder pushes back on time, let's say if the meeting is set up at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock for genuine reasons, and then there is an email say, hey, can we please do it before 6:30? I have a hard stop at 6:30. It is not perceived negatively anymore. There was a time I've seen it myself. I've sat as a one of the junior partners in a VC like investment room where they said, oh, but she has too much of scheduling issues. Maybe she will have this problem when she's building the company and she has these deadlines and everything. Mm. I've also seen where I have one of from my last venture fund, one of our female founder was generally on the face directly asked, what's her personal plans for having babies before when she was raising Series A?
Wow.
And so I think a lot of those things are, if not completely out of the mind, but are like put in a way more nicer manner, changed, the thought process has changed. And also I've seen that people have started realizing that there are certain things which they didn't realize were making people uncomfortable or women uncomfortable. So they've at least started paying attention to it consciously.
And on that note, can there be negative backlash from this being such an important conversation at the moment, especially has it almost maybe gone too far, at least in what you've seen?
Oh, yeah. There was very recently, 2 weeks back, somebody cracked a joke at me and like on me, at me, I don't know, whatever. But he's a friend. He was like, we were planning some VC dinner and drinks, which is in SF, it's just like supposed to go till late. Like, so I was like, it doesn't have an end time. I was joking with him. I know him for like years. And he's like, yeah, it's going to go till people are still standing. I'm like, great. And he's like, oh, yeah. And there are only you and other women. If you want to get plus one, that's fine. And I was like, you have never asked me to get plus one last 4 years.
All of a sudden.
And he's like, yeah, if whatever makes you comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think my biggest fear is that people just stop employing or engaging with women, fearing that something may happen. So like instead of actually handling, avoiding would be a very big downfall. And I really think if it starts happening, then we as women needs to like start calling it out very quickly.
Mm. Absolutely. And on the converse side of that as well, I do a lot of mentoring, and there's been quite a few conversations, quite interestingly, over the last 4 months with some young guys who are just kind of coming out of university at the moment and are a bit nervous about entering the profession, as well about, you know, being misconceived, for example, things like that. And there's an interesting aspect there that I think we need to look at as part of this as well. So again, it's been inclusive to everyone, I think, is a massive part of this agenda as well. And opening up opportunity across that goes beyond gender, I think, is an important part that sometimes isn't talked about as well.
So let's talk about some of those specific solutions. We have, you know, men and women in the room today. What would you say, we talked a little bit about the early stage, but maybe when you're in that early stage of not an early education, but early founding stage, what are some of the important things to remember to try to be inclusive? And maybe you can go at it kind of from both sides.
Sure. I think one thing that I've seen incredibly successful is the whole thing about mentoring partnerships. I think are brilliant. And certainly you mentioned earlier about things that maybe if you could have had it in the past, what would you have liked to have had? And I think, you know, that is not always that easy to find. Mm-hmm. And I think more structured support around that in organisations could be fantastic. And if you haven't got that, again, it's being pragmatic. I mean, I do a lot online. It's amazing conversations you have. Again, like things like Twitter, even, for example. Met so many amazing connections on there. You meet them in person as well. And that often has been creation of many great relationships. So you can look beyond things. Meetups like this are fantastic, and there are a lot of things that are free to access. So if you can't get it where you are, go outside the box a little bit. I hate that phrase, but in this section it kind of works. And just look for different ways until you find that right partnership, because that can be amazing. And it can also open other doors around the funding side of things and all sorts of different stuff. So if you haven't got it where you are now, look for ways to find that outside of where you are, and I think that can make a massive difference. But the more we can do to structure help in that way is great too.
And have you personally had your own mentors that have kind of guided you?
Interestingly, from different sectors, which I find quite interesting as well, because I'm very, very holistic in the way I work, and I've worked across different sectors and things. I find that really interesting because, again, in terms of inspiring creativity and different ideas, the more you get from different areas and bring those together and apply something from one sector to another, it can be fantastic for inspiration and innovation. So yeah, just be a little bit creative and pragmatic about where you go to for that. And if you haven't got it where you are, find a way to get it. And I'm always very much about collaboration and an open door around these sort of things. And I certainly want to pass it on to other people.
Mm. Yeah, I would say don't overthink too many things. I think I've actually come to a point where I've started saying, go reach out as you're doing business as usual. 95% of the people out there have no intentions. Like, they are all not bad. They are doing their own business. VC is also a very responsible business. I don't think anybody will end up actually investing in any company just because they have ulterior motives, right? It's a very costly business. You have to go through a big investment committee. You have to justify the case of investing into somebody. So people are doing their business, and of course they are bad actors, and it's be strong enough to call out a bad actor and say no, but also be smart enough not to judge everything based on having something at the back of the head and be a victim out there. So I always like young women founders when I talk to them, and especially when we have these, so we created this dinner series every month, once a month, where we get like a lot of women founders, a lot of women VCs, successful people, politics here and there, and this is completely off the record, no phones, no pictures, things which we just do when we have like 30, 40 people in the room, and we just talk about our experience. It could be when I was 10 year old, it could be now, and we have this unofficial list of people we just call out, mm-hmm. and that is more about you should know, and that's it. Now that person may behave differently towards me and may behave differently towards you, doesn't mean that person we characterize for the rest of the life, but you should have it at the back of your mind. But that doesn't mean every action has to be thought through from that thought process, you know. Mm-hmm. Like every time you get an email from a male VC saying, hey, I'm so sorry, I'm completely booked back to back, the only time I can do at 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. doesn't necessarily mean that there is something else going on. It's actually the nature of the job. I have done it myself. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Is there a role for policymakers to play in sort of enforcing some of how women should be seen in tech, in whether it's blockchain or any other sort of startup scene? Here in Europe, there's some regulation that women need to be on boards. We've seen some movement towards that, maybe in California, but of course that's a progressive example in the US. Or is this something that companies sort of just need to do on their own and take, is it sort of a more of a natural evolving progression?
Well, I think there is a role to play, definitely, but I also think this should be something that's coming from within organisations. Yeah. You know, I think biggest change is better driven from within, so I think that's massively important. And just on that note, there's something, because we touched on the UN right at the beginning of the conversation, so I can only say so much, but there's something particularly exciting and relevant to this that's going to be announced second week of January that I'm co-chairing, and I really would love to be able to say what it is now, but I got told off, but please keep an eye on that, because it alludes to what you're talking about there very strongly, and it's quite a structured program. It's going to really open up some opportunities, and I think things like that show a great benchmark and a great example, and I think it will be something that a lot of organizations will build upon. So I kind of want to kind of go down that angle,
really.
It's a little bit of a tease there, yeah, but I think that's particularly exciting. And it takes on board a lot of the themes we're drawing on today, so yeah, I'd like to say that on that one.
I personally don't think that there should be a mandatory rule to have women or any diversity point on the board, mm-hmm. because then you become a token board member, mm-hmm. and even if you have a prolific career and everything, there will always be one or two people who will see you. You're just there because we didn't have a choice. And I personally, individually, don't want to be on any of the boards or anywhere involved just because they didn't have a choice, mm-hmm. you know. And that's why, like, a lot of times when they say, oh, we have a panel and we need a woman and we need a woman of color to fit in, doesn't matter you have done this or not, just mm-hmm. please sit. And I'm like, no, sorry, it's a great place, but I don't fit in.
It's not the right
so
reason.
I think the policymakers should work on the education side, mm-hmm. that there should be more women in school, there should be more women in college, there should be more women engineers, there should be more women in finance industry from the educational perspective, or giving them support or scholarships, etc. But once you are in a professional space, then it should be your work, mm-hmm. and the policy should be more on the thought process of how to educate, that you don't see the sex, you don't see the color, you basically just see your performance, mm-hmm. and that's what should be the only reason for you to be somewhere.
In our last couple minute or so, if you could just give sort of your top piece of insight for our audience online and here, as what can be done to make this blockchain space specifically more inclusive and towards women specifically?
Okay, so from my point of view, going back to skills development, I think that's massively important. Opening up access, taking the conversation, we touched on it there, beyond gender, but looking at every, you know, looking at every group here, there are lots of underrepresented groups actually, so look, I think we need to look beyond that. I totally agree about not doing things for tokenistic reasons, excuse the pun when we're talking about blockchain, etc., but it's massively important. We want everybody wants their talent recognised, and we also need to, I think, work less in silos sometimes. So rather than having events that are around one specific sector, I think more cross-collaboration is really important too. So yeah, skills development, opening up access, taking away barriers to take part, and the whole thing around mentorship and visibility of role models and being out there, being open, willing to give time is a huge thing. So yeah, we can lead by example in many ways here to make a difference.
I always say, when even if it's male founders and they are hiring a CTO or a CMO, a female CMO, female CTO, female CEO, they are doing themselves such a big favor because you need a different perspective. You need a perspective where somebody comes and questions you and say, hey, by the way, you haven't think through. And if you're just doing your all your thought process with your bros, like over a pint or something, you're 100% missing that 5% which the best brain cannot think of, and you need that a combination and the balance of right and left brain. So please do yourself a favor, find that next most intelligent woman who can compliment you and make your company a real $1 billion company.
Thank you both so much for this discussion today.